Please join me in extending a warm welcome to Johnny H., our guest tonight from the Bellflower Big Book Group in Bellflower, California.
Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I want to thank my friend Dave for extending the privilege of me participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, and I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room and get sober and stay that way. Everything that's good and decent in my life is a byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't figure out any reason for it. I've been sober quite a while now. And in all that period of time, I've had an opportunity to go back over through my life, and I always look for something in there that would point to some goodness that I did a long time back there that would afford me to live this good life that I live. And so help me, I can't find it. If I could, I'd be doing it. So I've come to believe that what I was told when I was new here, that my sobriety is a gift from God. I guess we get sober by the grace of God, but I've been sober long enough to understand sometimes that grace given can be grace removed. You get to stay sober here by the application of these principles in your life one day at a time, and the willingness to give a little just for the hell of giving, expecting in return. And in the sum total of that, I've been given a very, very wonderful life. Now, I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind, which is more than I can say for some of you. And I only tell you that because a little over 46 years ago right now, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God, as he expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I don't get nothing else out of this thing at all, I guess I can live that for a long time. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here and take the popular theory and say, that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. Oh, God, I'd love to be able to say that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been a misfit. I've always been a little off plumb somewhere. I didn't know what it was. I was restless and irritable and discontented. I didn't like much of anything that was around me. I just was just restless all the time. I didn't realize until I got into the book Alcoholics Anonymous that those are the symptoms of the most deadly illness that's ever been known to man. It has killed more people in the 5,000 years of recorded history of it than anything that's ever been known to man, and that's what I got. Now, I didn't know that. See, it's hard for you to seek an answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. Now, I don't know what my problem is. I know a lot about whiskey. Every my family drank whiskey. I mean, they were Irish. They had no religion to hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy, them people. I mean, they drank whiskey and went to penitentiaries. They drank whiskey and worked in them whorehouses on the other side of the tracks. My mother drank whiskey and beat up my dad. My dad got drunk and beat up my mother. Every once in a while, they both got drunk and beat me up. I saw what whiskey did to people. My reaction to that was, I didn't say whiskey was bad. I said, I ain't going to drink. I ain't going to be like these people, for Christ's sake. I'm going to step out of that world. I'm going to have something. I'm going to do something. I'm going to be something. I didn't know what was going on in my life. I didn't realize I was suffering from this illness. This spiritual malady my book talks about, this restlessness and this irritability in my soul. I started looking for a way out of this dilemma as far back as I could ever possibly remember. I'm looking a way out of this dilemma. I don't want to be where I'm at. I don't want to do that. I don't want to feel this way. I know there's God. I looked up one day, my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived when she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober 45 and a half years. Big deal, she'd say. I hadn't had a drink for 90. I used to look at her and say, you ought to have a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she needed out of life, out of the church that she went to, I guess, because I used to watch her every Sunday morning, because I spent a great deal of time with my grandmother, because my people were busy. You know, Alkies are busy people. I mean, they got things to do, places to tear up and stuff like that. And I used to watch my grandmother where they used her house for a war zone every Saturday. There'd be bodies laying all over the place, and she'd get up on Sunday morning and step over them, put on the best thing she had, and she'd take off, be gone for a couple hours. And when she came, something had happened to her. I could see her as clear as I can see you. She was a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being. She danced around these people and cleaned them up and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that, and I filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. For you who are new, this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You'll never go to an Al-Anon meeting and hear about it, I can guarantee you that. They'll say things like the alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet. We will. I looked around this room tonight, everybody was talking, nobody was listening. You could ask them anything about how to build a watch or fly to the moon. You'd get an answer from somebody, I can tell you that. But because I don't know any better, and because I don't know what's wrong with me, I got this idea in my head. So all I'm going to have to do is go where my mother goes, do what my grandmother does, I'd be like my grandmother. I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not an alcoholic. I didn't know that. So as a child, I put my hand in my grandmother's hand, and I went over and sat in my grandmother's church and waited for whatever happened to Granny to happen to me. And I don't remember anything happening, if you want to know the truth. I know it was bad or good. I just, nothing. And it took me a long time sober to realize a very simple fact. There was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it. Me. What I'm doing in that church is what I've done all my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. A long time after I was here, probably even a great deal of time today, I don't know. I'm looking for something way out there to make me feel better in here. And it only goes to prove to me that the problem's always been there. And I found thought was an answer, sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day, watching my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. My grandfather put it down, went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. I just took a drink. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that alcohol affects me differently than it affects 9 out of the other 10 people in the world who drink it. I didn't know that because it was good. I mean, it was. If it had been bad, I'd have never taken it. I hear people talk about, I took a drink of alcohol and made me gag and puke and come out my nose and all that. That bothers me. It's like somebody bad-mouthing an old girlfriend or something. You know what I mean? Told him, by God, if it tastes that bad and did that to me, I'd have never drank it again. I tell you what that stuff did to me. It went inside of me and stilled the madness. That's all. It took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the gray fringe of the business of living, and installed in me an arrogance that said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. Now, that's not what took me into the gates of insanity and death, the reaction or the feeling I got from alcohol. What took me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond is what happens to alcoholics of my type once I put alcohol into my system. See, once I put it in there, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. Because I took a drink, then the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. 3 days later, I was pulled out from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sent to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me every time I drank. I got drunk and went places. I had to travel around. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries, to penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house, if you want to know the truth. Hell, it's a little more macho. Come on, if you're going to be bad, for Christ's sake, you ought to be bad. I mean, drinking cause you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there. I threw everything into the battle, lost the battle, and didn't have a clue what was kicking my tail. I didn't have the slightest idea, because I walked out of institutions from the time I was 9 years old until I was 30, as physically sober as I am this moment. And not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of those electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and kill your baby brother? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and stand on them street corners and run with them gangs and rip them and run them out there? Yeah. Have a drink of alcohol and go out there and tear your mother's heart out one more time. Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and commit that mayhem and do those kind of things and get thrown out of those speeding? Why don't you have a drink? Nope. See, an alcoholic of my type, after being sober for a period of time, does not drink to get drunk. An alcoholic of my type never takes a drink to get drunk. After being sober for a period of time, I just want to go, whew. But you see, if you're an alcoholic of my type, that's all it takes. But once I succumb to the desire and take a drink, then the phenomenon of craving takes over. And I got to drink it to the end. That went over and over and over and over again. I'm 10 or 11 years old sitting on a street corner with my little gang on a furlough from a reform school. And we're doing stuff. We're still acting hip. We know we're keen and cool. And bouncing around and acting like we invented something. You know, just... And I'm sitting there, we're drinking. I'm a very unique individual in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started on cheap wine and worked down. And that ain't easy. But I'm drinking this stuff. It was called Marco Petri Red. And I know you've never heard of it. And the reason you never heard of it is because it was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. It never was near a vineyard, so you don't have to worry about looking it up out there. But I'm drinking this stuff, and I don't know, my little gang guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't you try these? And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I can do. Can you possibly imagine what the discussion meetings would be? I'm an alcoholic and an X-Lax taker. I just really had a crappy life before I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I hear stuff stupider than that in some of these meetings. That's why I don't go to many of them. Work. That's all I can tell you. It's work. It's like lighting the afterburners on a rocket ship. Only this one sent me straight to hell. If your hell's any hotter where I've been, I pray God I don't ever go there. Because a couple of years later, I'm sitting on that same street corner, and I'm eating these pellets, and I'm drinking this cheap wine, and I'm hanging around my little gang. We're bebopping around there, and booby-dooby, and all that kind of stuff. We'd had hats. We'd had them on backwards, probably. We were so hip, the balls of our feet was when we walked. Guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. Everything. I'm like a plague. And there's a reason for that. You see, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I got an ego bigger than this whole church. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. For a long time after I'm getting into recovery here pretty quick. That usually sends them out with a growth, I think. I always hear about that sickness. My entire lifetime was spent without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth. Just wasn't. And at the ripe old age of 26 years old, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. And what's significant about that to me today is that day, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth who would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But you know what? They should be gone. I don't have any right to have any of them back. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I stumbled into a room and got sober and stayed that way. Everything that's good in my life is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't come here to get sober. I came to my first meeting on the fourth day of November, 1959, in that state. And the reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous a little over 45 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. So that'll go to tell you motives don't mean nothing. If it's just it's your time, it's your time. I really don't have a handle on that either. But that's not what got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That may have been what attracted me to you, but that's not what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, my last time out, I killed me for all intents and purposes. I ended up on the Los Angeles County Jail, more dead than alive. Tied down on a bed with a medical doctor standing over the foot of my bed told me I'm going to die. He said, son, you're going to die, and there's nothing we can do for you. That did not seem like a bad idea to me. I didn't want to go on living the way I was living, doing the things I was doing, hurting the people I was hurting, and I was powerless not to, and I knew that. And that type of option, death seemed like a better idea than living. Going on living the way I was living was nothing to be shooting for. And I didn't know anything better to do. And so I just nodded my head. The doctor left. He came back the next morning, stood at the foot of my bed, looked down at me, looked at the chart, and said, son, you're going to die. There's nothing we can do for you. I said, okay. I don't know how long a period of time came and went. But one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, oh, God, help me. Now, there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, we got an AA meeting down there. I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere with one of those great moons. I just went to sleep for a little while. And I don't know how many of you ever kicked a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I've been asleep in a long time. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. And there's a good reason for that. In the back of my mind then, as well as it is tonight, back here where I live, is the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life's terms, I know what the big hurt go away. And being an alcoholic, if you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, I'm going to be history. I know that. Without a shadow of a doubt, I know that. I know what makes the big hurt go away. And in the back of my mind is that knowledge. And that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I moved in and sit down in the back row where people like me sit. I didn't want to get up too close. Somebody might think I'm a member of AA. I didn't know what AA was, but I didn't know what it was. Sitting on the back row, I leaned up and saw two big A's upon the backboard. I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I said to this clown sitting next to me, what's this? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. I ain't allowed to see the big gangster hang around with them winos. Been Gangsters Anonymous, or Overhip Anonymous, or Doo-Doo's Anonymous. Dope Fiend Anonymous. Dope Fiend! God damn. Jeez. Makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it? Gotta remember, if you're gonna be bad, for Christ's sake, be bad. Get it on out there. We'll be here. I don't know what A is. Nobody ever mentioned AA to me. They mentioned the gas chamber a couple times. I thought to myself, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racy stories. Now, you got to remember that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't many good-looking girls hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous. If they were, they weren't bringing them up that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. This old gal got up to talk, and one of them said she'd drank for a long time. Hell, you could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. See, I knew everything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true, and there I sit, for all intents and purposes, a dead man. Staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. But I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what the problem is. Over and over and over again, if I could leave you with one thing at all, it's this. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what your problem is. And most of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous haven't got a clue what's wrong with them. Do you know what the American Medical Association says my illness is? Says it's the number one killer in the world today. It says it's the second leading cause for permanent insanity in the world today. So the next time you stick up your little hand and say you're an alcoholic, that's what you just copped out to. But if you don't know that, you think you have some social illness, like a dose of clap or something, that you can come here once in a while and have it cured, you're in for a serious miscalculation of things. I don't know. How would I know? They're just another group of people to hate, that's all. The people from Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what it is. I just kept coming back to their meetings. And what you proved to me when I was new was that I'm not alcoholic. You proved it to me. I'm sitting in the back row in the inventory point where I belong. I'm sitting back there, and people get up at podiums like this, much like I am on Sunday morning, and they say things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. Everything is just wonderful. Back there at the inventory point where I'm saying to myself, I can't be alcoholic then. God, I wish I was. God, if I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. But there's something far more wrong with me than that. And unbeknownst to me, I am trying to identify with the problem of alcohol when I'm infected with a spiritual illness, a malady of a spiritual nature. I don't understand that. How could I understand that? I'm as physically sober as the guy speaking. And I'm crazy. I'm stone nuts sitting back there, ready to rip anything that comes near me. And he's talking about don't drink, and I'm as sober as he is. How could I say I'm an alcoholic? What saved my life is a very simple thing. I kept coming back to these meetings. Whether it was to scoff, make fun of these people, or what it was, or maybe it was the answer to that prayer I made on my deathbed in the old Los Angeles County Jail that would get me into position for a man to walk into that institution one day that I knew did 23 flat years in the penitentiary. And he stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me something I have never forgotten. It makes more sense to me tonight than it did then. It'll make more sense to me tomorrow than anything I'll ever learn. He looked down right and he said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. He said very simply, you don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me since I was that high that I shouldn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, but nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. And what none of these great learned people who kept poking around in my head never seemed to understand. Every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am this moment. How many times I wanted to scream out at them, good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. If you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. You ever listen to them? I mean, they are pathetic. I mean, it's the damnest thing I've ever seen. Oh, no, thanks. I'm starting to feel it. I got paid. I need to be home. Oh, yeah. I gave an illustration a couple, 3 years ago, my lovely wife Karen and I were coming back from somewhere and we caught a plane in Dallas. We were going to the Long Beach and the plane was oversold, so they kicked us up to first class. We're no more off the ground. Wheels are up and the steward, I come running down the aisle with a bottle of wine. And of course, you know, they always do that when you're sober. I mean, nobody does it when you're not sober. And she poured the woman across the aisle from us a glass of wine. The woman curled up and went to sleep. My wife, lovely wife of mine, who is alcoholic, said to me, did you see that? Spiritual giant that I am said, yes, I am. Don't bother. I tell you, it was miserable for a while. A couple of three ginger ales, a couple of coffees. Never took my eyes off that glass of wine. My wife was over my shoulder watching it too, trying to drink her Coke. Pretty soon the steward and I come down there and woke this woman up and fed her lunch. She ate her lunch, turned back over and went back to sleep. Hasn't touched that wine yet. I haven't eaten. I'm just staring at that woman. About time the pilot comes on and says, we're making our final approach into Long Beach. Just runs down there and wakes this woman up and says to her, madam, you want to finish your wine? Finish it? For Christ's sake, you hadn't even started the damn stuff yet. That's what I wanted to say, but I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and spiritual giant. What that lady said next damn near got me to jump on her. She looked at that stewardess with all the innocence in the world and says, oh, no, if I drink that wine, I'll get sleepy. See, I don't understand that. There ain't no way in God's world I could possibly understand that. That woman's not alcoholic. Do you think she would have understood it if I'd have had two highballs and shanghaied the plane to Mexico? The difference. She's not. I am. I went up to this little man after the meeting. His name was Les Hamlin. He's dead now. He used to be my baseball coach when I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates. I put that on a resume once. You ought to saw that guy. You know what he said to me? San Quentin. He said, yes. He said, where's that? I said, it's up near the bay. He said, was it a good school? I said, I learned a lot of stuff there, sir. I went up to him. I said, how do you learn how to live? See, I'm not interested in being sober from that day to this day without any alcohol or mood-altering chemicals or anything in my system. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in how I can late night and sleep all night without waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat with nightmares and my mother's face staring across me at a gravesite while I'm handcuffed between two detectives as they bury my baby brother. Cold sweat. I wake up in the middle of the night with my mother staring at me with those eyes and those hate-filled eyes and that screaming through the visioning screen. Look what you've done now, scum. You've killed our baby. Those things were haunting me. That's the way it was when I was sober. And that's just one of the many atrocities that I committed out there running the streets in my self-centered, self-serving life. Faces and names. And that's what sobriety was to me. And I wanted to know how you could lay down and sleep all night. How you get rid of these nightmares. And he looked at me and he gave me an answer that's seemingly being lost in Alcoholics Anonymous today. He didn't give me one of these stupid ass answers that you hear. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't drink if your ass falls off. Don't drink no matter what. I don't know who coined that crap, but they sure weren't an alcoholic. Alcoholics drink no matter what. And I'm going to be drunk a long time before the pain gets severe in my butt. I'm an alcoholic. I do not like pain in any way, shape, or form. He said there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. Next day, I went over and stole the book out of the prison library. Well, there's a reason for that. See, I got big-time gangster, big-time dope dealer, big-time convict image hanging around me. I'm raised in the state of California. I'm bad! And you ain't going to see nobody like me checking out a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. How lame is that? Hey! But I opened up the book. I didn't open up the book to be sober, to find the God of my very understanding, to learn how to be service in a world that I don't belong to. I didn't do that. I opened up the book to prove to you my case was different, wouldn't work for me. And a funny thing started to happen to me. I started to identify with things that were written in the book. I started identifying a doctor's opinion about the phenomenon of craving, what happened to me when I took a drink of alcohol. It started to trigger off little images of what happened once I drank, because I could see that I wasn't drinking then. Then a great breakthrough was I got into Bill's story, and I started to identify with Bill Wilson, the guy who wrote the book. He was a stockbroker. I didn't identify with him being a stockbroker. I identified with him what was happening after he came off of one of those drunks. The bewilderment and the terror and the remorse and the guilt. That's what I identified with. Then an amazing thing happened to me. I sat in a room one day with a man, and I did what this book says is a fifth step. And I heard myself say to this man that I was an alcoholic. From way down deep inside of me came this freedom that I have at this very moment. See, as I stand here before you tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from an illness, alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have your program. And the reason I couldn't have it is I separated me from you. I'm a little better than you, a little slicker than you, a little hipper than you, a little better than you. Richer, poor, whatever the and is, I'm different. It separates me from you. When I became just like you, or at least like the people who wrote this book, it became my great privilege to be allowed to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 5,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. And what blows my mind more than anything else is that I get to do it. I get to do these things. I get to go to Portland. I make coffee at my Wednesday night meeting. I get to put the chairs away at my Monday night meeting. I get to put the chairs away on my Thursday night meeting. I get to have the privilege of sitting down and listening to people go through these wonderful steps. To me, it's not about being sober anymore. My kickoff and payoff in Alcoholics Anonymous is to watch you get sober. To watch whatever happened to me happen to you. But you see, here's the trick. If nothing's ever happened, how are you going to recognize anything that happened? If you still seem the same selfish, self-centered jackass you've always been, how you expect to do anything? The book has got a tremendous statement in it. It says selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of all of our problems. We must be rid of it or it's going to kill us. It doesn't say I ought to quit drinking or it's going to kill me, or I ought to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. It says if I don't get rid of this selfishness and self-centeredness of mine, it's going to kill me. I don't have any choice in the matter. There's a tremendous line in the second paragraph of the third chapter that a lot of people completely overlook in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's very simply this. We have to concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholics. That's the first step in recovery. It's not sitting up and sticking my hand up, yeah, I'm alcoholic because they told me over the center I should say that. Or I got drunk once and wet my pants. I'm alcoholic, you know. I have a drinking problem. You got a drinking problem, Alcoholics Anonymous can't help you. Sorry to tell you that. If you have a problem with drugs, Alcoholics Anonymous can't help you. Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to arrest and make well a spiritual illness, a malady of a spiritual nature. And if you have a spiritual illness and a spiritual malady, you need a spiritual answer. So what's the answer? It's in this book. It's there. How do you achieve this? Who's read here tonight? If you weren't busy jockeying for position, you probably heard it. Having had, past tense, a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics. So what message are you talking about? What I was like, what happened to me, what I'm trying to be like today. So, I walked out of that penitentiary on the 4th of June, 1961, to a world I didn't know anything about. I didn't have a clue what people did out here. I didn't have a driver's license. I'd never had a Social Security card. I'd never held a job. I'd never worked a day in my life. What little education I had an institution. Whatever I didn't know nothing. But I was armed with something when I walked out of that institution that I had never been armed with before in the times I went in and out of those institutions. In 19 months, I had incorporated the first 9 steps of our program of recovery into my life. And in doing so, a dream appeared in my head that I never thought would materialize, but it was a dream. It wasn't a pledge like they want you to take. I am responsible. The dream was this, that maybe someday you would allow me the great privilege of coming and sitting in your meetings. I never dreamed in my wildest imagination that anybody would ever ask me to do anything here. I thought you'd make me sit out in that patio with a chair and let it come out. I didn't think you'd let a thing like me sit with you good people. So I said to myself, if they will give me the privilege, and this is without conditions, if they will give me the privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I'm very pleased to be allowed to tell you this evening that for over 44 years of my life, I have done whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. Not always happily and not always willingly. I'm not skipping along the road of happy destiny. Sometimes dragged by the hair of the head, kicking and screaming, but I always do it because I don't have a better idea. And I'm going to stand here and tell you something that really is amazing to me. I don't know anybody in the world who lives any better than I do. Oh, I know a lot of people who have more things than I do. But I don't know anybody who lives any better than I do. Do you know what it's like to lay down and sleep all night long? Do you know what it's like to live most of your life in some degree of peace and comfort? To believe and know that there's a God of my very own that takes care of me no matter what kind of a jackpot I put myself in? What a tremendous thing is. What a tremendous thing they write in this book. There's an assumption all through our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out past tense after studying this book for 40-some-odd years. Bill writes assumptions all through this book that certain places you're supposed to arrive at as a result of doing certain things. He assumes that you have got to this point where he did as a result of doing certain things. What a lot of people don't understand, Bill Wilson never just laid down one day and had a spiritual awakening because he wanted one. He essentially worked the first 9 steps of our program of recovery before it was ever written. And with foresight beyond any type of intelligence that we know about today, he put it in this book so Alcoholics Anonymous and its message would not be garbled. So you and I, 70 years later, can sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, have the same opportunity to live the good life that Bill Wilson had because he wrote it down what happened to him and what he's going to be like today. I walked out of that penitentiary. I went to see my mother. My mother fell off the step blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch. Said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I'd like to tell you, I got sober, and my mom got sober, and my dog got sober, and the cat got sober, and we're just sober, 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 just happy sober. You know, you hear some of this crap, makes you want to puke, don't it? My mother drank herself to death. I had a ringside seat watching it. Sitting in the safe confines of Alcoholics Anonymous, I watched my mother drink herself to death. Powerless to do anything about it other than the fact to go see her and put my arms around her and tell her I loved her. And the few times when she drank herself sober, she would stumble into the arms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The guy said to me one day, "Your mother went in and out of AA for a long time." "Yes, how long was she sober?" I said, "I don't think my mother was ever sober." My mother was like a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who just show up here in a state of undrunkenness. That's not being sober. That's just being undrunk. Sobriety is a way of life. It's a peaceful coexistence between me and you and God. That's what sobriety is to me. Just putting the plug in the jug and my butt in the chair doesn't bring that about. It just doesn't do it. It never has in my life. I was talking to a guy one time. He said, "Well, I guess your mama was in a state of denial." I don't know what treatment center he fell out of. But my book don't talk about no denial. My book talks about a delusion. The delusion that I'm like other people or they may be has to be smashed. Once alcoholic, always alcoholic. There ain't no way in the world I'm ever going to be a non-alcoholic. And there ain't no way in God's world that I have found in 40-some-odd years of my life where I am ever going to be part of that thing out there. Now, it doesn't look like that from time to time because I get up and go to work. I become self-supporting through my own contribution. And what happened to me is, see, I didn't know anything about the fellowship. Well, I know a lot about a program of recovery. You can learn that in a book. But that doesn't mean you know anything about a fellowship because they're two entirely different things. And the difference being the program of recovery, foolproof and application, perfect structure. Anybody who applies it to their life will get better. Now, the fellowship is different. It's made up of a bunch of alcoholics. All the self-centered, self-serving, egotistical, driven people who are self-centered to the extreme. So I ran into a guy one night by the name of Norm Alpe who told me he was going to be my sponsor. I didn't ask him. I mean, I know about AA, baby. I studied the book. I know AA. I could quote you verse and chapter. Well, what an egotistical ass that is, I'll tell you that. You know anybody like that, stay away from them. I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you're going to be my sponsor. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, then what am I supposed to do? He said, why don't you do what I do? I said, what is it you do? And then he gave me the mystery of sponsorship. Well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. I just broke it down for you. Great mystery of sponsorship. Even more simpler, being that I'm in Portland. I'll lay it out a little easier. It's called monkey see, monkey do. The only problem is you better pick the right monkey. You better have to pick one of these jackass monkeys who hang around on the outside saying, you don't have to do that. I've been here 10 years. I never do that. I'm 10 years sober. I'm still an alcoholic and something or other. My case is different. Find one of these monkeys who've got a mop in his hand. Find one of these monkeys who are setting up meetings and taking them down and coffee and having it prepared for us wonderful folks when we show up. Never say thank you. Just come in and sit down because we have our rights to be here, you know. Have our cup of coffee and make sure we don't be in our seat when the basket comes our way. Somebody might expect us to put money in it, for Christ's sake. Find one of them monkeys who are passing the basket. But God knows there's enough monkeys hanging around who ain't doing a damn thing around here. My sponsor called them Typhoid Marys. Nobody knows who Typhoid Mary was, but she was an old woman who used to be a cook in gold mining camps in California. Typhoid Mary carried the typhoid fever with her, but she never got sick. She never died. She just carried around and infected other people who died. A lot of AA like that. Typhoid Mary. You can recognize them. They're easy to recognize. They don't pay attention to what goes on in meetings. It's not necessary for them to behave. I had a sponsor who told me the first thing he ever said to me, he said, why don't you get a job and go to work? You're a bum. I said, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you? I said, I'm an AA member. He said, no, you're a bum. Bums don't work. He said, while we're at it, why don't you get off of welfare? I almost hit him. I said to him, I ain't never been on welfare, Norm Alpe. Don't you ever say that to me again. He said, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution? He wouldn't let me drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. He said to me, how long has it been suspended? I said, for the rest of my natural life. He said, then you won't drive a car the rest of your natural life. I said, why? I've never had a driver's license since 1946. He says, no. He said, but you've been in and out of institutions since 1946, too. So I have to call him up to go to meetings. Humbled myself. Norm, I know you're driving by here tonight on your way to Santa Ana, that little hot place over there in Santa Ana where that little club, and would you come by and pick me up? I'd like to ride along with a meeting with you. It's a hot July night. And he said, okay, I'll be by there at 6 o'clock, jackass. Be standing on the street corner. I ain't waiting for you. So I got to thinking about that. I knew where we were going, a little club and one-car garage is where they held the meetings, and everybody smoked. I mean, they were so evil then. You couldn't even see the speaker sitting there. I got to thinking, that's bad for a newcomer to think. I got to thinking. I said, well, I know where we're going. So I went in and got out my new shorts, my new tank top. I slicked back my hair, put my go-alongs on. If I'd had a hat, I'd have had it on backwards, but I didn't. Put my shades on and stood on the street corner in my pose, waiting for my sponsor. He drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. I don't know how many have ever heard any Norm Alpie tape, but you came very close that night to never hearing another one. I'd had it up to here with him. I chased him down the street throwing rocks at his car for a while. Then, like I was wont to do, I waited till about 11 o'clock at night. I thought he was asleep to call him. Nothing like calling him 11 o'clock at night to see if they're sincere. I used to call him every once in a while and say things like, Norm! I said, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. I said, Norm, my program ain't working, Norm. He said, why don't you try ours? little play on words there. But he always filled it out. He'd say, jackass, your program. Your program at the ripe age of 26 years old got you crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary drifting out of total insanity. That's your program. Jeez. He says, now on a part-time basis, our program has afforded you a very good life. I can't argue about that. But this night I was hot. Norm, you let me stand on the street corner like I'm an idiot. He said, you are an idiot. He said, you act like an idiot, you behave like an idiot, you dress like an idiot, you are an idiot. He says, you ever stop to think that maybe you ought to dress better than a newcomer? Give the newcomer something to shoot for? He said, would you go to church dressed like that? I said, no. He said, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. Jeez. I said, okay, how come you yell at me and tell me to shut up and sit still at meetings? Johnny, if you want to go to meetings, you don't want to listen, that's your business. You ever stop to think that maybe somebody else does? I said, no. He said, I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. He said, maybe you ought to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous sometime. Get there early before it starts, so you don't wander in so everybody can see you. Sit down and pay attention from the time they hit the gavel until the time they say amen. And I said, why? Always ask him that. He said, one of these days, Johnny, you're going to need everything you ever hear in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you better hope you're not hanging around in one of these meetings where these jackasses don't think about anybody but yourself. It's about the minute you're supposed to hear the message, some jackass is going to jump up in front of you and walk out or reach over and say something he just have to say. It's been my great fortune that I don't go to meetings like that. I go to meetings where people have some respect and love for Alcoholics Anonymous and try to set examples for newcomers so the newcomer will have something to shoot for. So a newcomer doesn't sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, if that's all that sucker ever got out of 10 years of sobriety, this can't be much going on here. They can't even afford a full pair of pants. Now, I don't judge. I'm just reporting the facts to you. Because, you see, my concern in AA today is not for the people who are doing all that crap. I don't care about them. My concern is for the newcomer who just may be hanging on here by a thread. That this may be the last house on the block for the newcomer because they run their gamut of the easy does it groups and the easy does it people and the do whatever you want, just don't drink no matter what. all the treatment centers and all the facilities, they run out of insurance premiums. And they may have stumbled in here with some kind of an idea, this is the last gas on the bridge. I don't ever want to be the person that the newcomer sits in a meeting and say, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is like. I don't even need it. That isn't anything different than I had out on the streets. That isn't any different than I had in the penitentiary. I had people who were so hit the balls that their feet tickled when they walked around in penitentiary. I don't need that bullshit in AA. My sponsor was a magnificent man. Wonderful man. He taught me all kinds of things. There was another man who was very close to me. A guy by the name of Chuck, who was my father in AA, probably the only father I've ever known. And he used to say crazy things to me. I used to try to mimic him. And he'd say things like, well, that's not the way I said it. But he called me son, and I called him papa. And I loved him probably more than I've ever loved any human being in my life. Matter of fact, he is the person who essence of love in my life, more than me. And I got tired of talking to him or trying to mimic him, so I tried to read things to him that I would pick up at the literature table. And that's sometimes a dangerous place. One night I tried to pick up a pamphlet to read it to him. I was over there at the literature table, and I was trying to pick up this pamphlet. And it was Why We Were Chosen. And I tried to read him. He said, wait a minute, we're not chosen. I said, Cedric, I don't care what that said. We're not chosen. He said, what makes you think we're chosen? I said, I'm sober. And I know people who are far better people than I who aren't sober. How come if I'm not chosen, why is that true? He said, Johnny, he makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust. He says, the reason you're sober is because you've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it. I said, what do God's kids act like? You know, they just wander around and do things, praying for fun. Try to help them get it done. And don't ask anything in return for it. There's no modi operation in there. There's no idea I'm going to do this and get to stay sober. I have to do this to stay sober. No. See, you don't have to think to drink if you're alcoholic. All you got to do is quit doing the things that make you comfortable in here. You're going to wake up drunk. A very simple solution. If you're alcoholic. Now see, I only talk to alcoholics. The heavy drinkers and the drug users, they don't need spiritual experiences. They don't need a spiritual way of life. All they need to do is quit drinking and quit using drugs. Go on about their happy road of destiny out there. Alcoholics of my type who don't find a spiritual solution are going to die drunk. It's an amazing thing to me. It is absolutely and totally amazing. I remember one night I was with my sponsor. I go to a meeting with him, and I'm sitting down there where Dave is, and I'm getting a little feisty. I've been sober a few years now, and I'm giving a few 10-minute talks, and I'm starting to bounce around on my heels a little more. You know, I'm in that dangerous stage where I know more than I should, you know, and would tell you in a minute if you ask. And I'm back at the literature table, it's coffee break, and the guy tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around, and there's some kid there standing there. He looked at me and said, Johnny! I said, yeah, that's me. How we are. He said, I heard you talk the other night, man. He said, do you know you're a miracle? I said, really? What did I say? Oh, he told me. 10 minutes, he just told me how wonderful I was, and I just sucked it in like a sponge. Got about that high off the ground, just kind of floated back down and sat in my seat, stared out the window. I was looking from a spaceship or something. I don't know what I'm looking for. I'm so wonderful, I can't stand it. Norm's up there talking. He's watching me, and I'm... On the way home that night, he's driving, of course, because I don't have a car. And he said, Jackass, what's the matter with you? You smoking that stuff? I don't think you're going to understand this, Norm, but I'm a miracle. He almost went insane. I mean, he yelled, you're what? He damn stopped the car in the middle of, almost ran into the divider. I'm scared of it. He said, where do you get this nonsense? I said, you can't get an AA. He said, you're not a miracle, jackass. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You're just a small part of it. Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in Portland, but I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. You can't possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle. You can let your imagination soar. I'd probably be hiring some Greyhound buses to take us all to Waco tonight to do it right this time. See, I have an ego like that. I know that. I'm not at least bit mystified by my lack of ego. I know I have. That's why I have to have a sponsor who's stronger than my head. That's why it's necessary for me to go to 3 or 4 or 5 meetings a week. Average that out over 40-some years. That's why it's a necessity for me to stick out my hand to a newcomer and try to maintain some degree of dignity for the newcomer, an alcoholic to not. Because of this thing that's me, this insatiable appetite, egotism of mine that will not let it go. Now, I've been a busy man in Alcoholics Anonymous since I walked out of that penitentiary 44 years ago. And nothing's ever suffered in my life because of my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous. I raised 2 kids whose mother committed suicide when I was 5 years sober. I've got 4 grandsons and a couple of great-granddaughters now floating around loose out there. One daughter, my oldest daughter, is really weird. She's not alcoholic. I don't know what happened there. I never raised these kids. I work. I've had business failures. I've had relationship failures. I've had divorces. I've lived through and stayed through adulterous situations which brought about divorces. It's just situations that go on. That's life. But if you were to call up my sponsor today, you would find out there's no secrets between me and my sponsor. My sponsor knows exactly where I'm at right now, what I'm doing. And I know exactly where he's at and what he's doing. It's a wonderful thing. I'm not very good at relationships. I'm too self-centered to the extreme to be very good at relationships. I am. I know that. Here's the most miraculous thing that I know of. I'm married to probably the most wonderful, magnificent woman that I have ever encountered on my walk through this thing called life. Now, maybe I have changed some. I don't know. Maybe I have grown up enough to be allowed to share me with another human being in love. Maybe I have been given enough capacity to love another human being. I don't think about me before I think about anybody else. And the best way I can explain it, and the way it's been brought to me, the way it looked like to me, I have finally found somebody that I love more than I love me. And you don't realize what a mouthful that is for an alcoholic of my type to say. If you're an alcoholic, you have to understand that. I actually love another human being more than I love me. And she's really one of these type of people I really married way above my station. A wonderful, solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love her dearly. And she just turns me on. And I'm not young. And there ain't no little blue pills involved either. What I'm trying to tell you is that every day is not a banquet. Every day is out there. I have never risen above human being. But I can tell you this. In my 45 and a half years in Alcoholics Anonymous, the only jackpots I have been in has been because of my selfishness and my self-centeredness. It has nothing to do with the world. It has nothing to do with the people, places, things, or circumstances. God is not trying to teach me anything. I haven't missed anything in the book. I have got my egotism and my self-centeredness to the extreme, to the point that I get to thinking every once in a while that I know what's going to make my life better. And for the life of me, every time I get into that mode, I'm in a lot of trouble. And if I act on that type of a self-centered, sick idea, I'll guarantee you that I'm going to have a restless night, and I'm going to have to go down and lay it out in front of my sponsor and ask him what he did when he was in that situation before. So if you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, I wish you well. I really do. I hope that you don't ever have to go back out and live in them streets like I did. I hope you don't ever have to. But you know what? I'm powerless not to do that. If I could install in you everything I've been given here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, I wouldn't do it. And it's not that I want to deny you anything. You see, it's not mine to give, number one. And I would not deprive you of the journey to wake up someday and to realize all is right in the world. To wake up someday and realize that I have a purpose for living. To live someday and sit all night in a meeting and watch some jackass that you know couldn't make it stand up here and get a birthday cake and have that light all over him. To watch this light go on in another human, the same light that went on within me when I was in this book. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And if you're trying to live in such a way that you would keep that away from anybody else, why don't you just go somewhere and be by yourself so you don't kill anybody? But if you're going to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're going to claim to be members of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're going to claim to be of service, then at least look like Alcoholics Anonymous has done something for you other than the fact to take you out of left field and put your butt in a chair. Every living thing I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Every living thing I may ever hope to have in my life, I would owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you got to believe this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good friends like David, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much.